Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. And I'm sitting here in my dingy pseudo-recording studio, which is, of course, my closet. I have my bookshelves to my left and all of my recording equipment to my right and all of my medicine securely locked away in child-safe areas. I'm not the most technologically literate person, for damn sure. So I know I've been saying this for a long time, but I want to make more effort towards bettering the sound quality and starting to develop more when it comes to the organization of the show. Like, eventually I want to make my own, like, theme song and whatnot, but that's not really the most important part. So why are we here? Why are we sitting here in my closet? And what are we doing? What is the Gingerbread Man here to talk to you about? And I'm not trying to speak to myself in third person either. But I guess I would say my first and most abundant goal in this life is to be inspiring. I would like to encourage other people to find what they are curious about. And there's a lot of things to be curious about. There's a lot of things to be interested in. And that might not have anything to do with what I'm interested in. And we may even have a hard time describing what our passions are to each other if we are speaking such drastically different languages when it comes to this language of interest. You know, but I do think it is contagious. I do think that within our social systems of interdependent beings and persons that we do have an impact on one another. And if somebody sees you be passionate about what you're interested in, I think that that spreads like a virus and that they're going to go be interested in something. And along with that contagion, I do also like to think of this breed of unconditional love that I think that I try to push. And this love comes from a feeling of awe. A-W-E, as an awesome. You know, have you ever felt awe? You know, the first time I held my son, I felt awe. I felt awe the first time I ever saw a mountain range here in my lovely state of Colorado, which I was not born in. So there was a time period where I'd never seen mountains and I got to see them. Or when you see the ocean, you know, or some other natural or creation that you have the ability to witness, but not judge, to perceive, but to not determine. You see, sometimes I look up at a sunrise or just the sky on any day at any time, and I'm filled with this sense of awe. And from that sense of awe in our world comes this worldly compassion that grows from that. And this is something I believe in deeply that I know that others may not share. And I guess this is where I feel that I have a strong optimist label, even though sometimes I've tried to call myself a realist. I am very optimistic about who we are as people. You know, do you feel optimistic about your fellow man and your fellow stranger, fellow woman or child or elder or human? You know, when you think about where we're going, which a lot of bad decisions have been made and are continuing to be made, yet I still feel that the dominant narrative over time has been pushing us to be closer and more intimate. And the technologies that may be separating us and the decisions on such massive global scales that may be separating us in this small scope, I think over time, I do feel that the human trend has been towards this more inclusive, empathetic, and aware world consciousness. So let's go back to this old idea of mind, which I call the group mind, the Übermensch, the overmind. I see that there is a collectiveness, an amalgamation that happens when several individuals are together and working together, that a group consciousness begins to adhere and decide the decisions of the we over the me. So what does this mean? This means that I think that there are various circles of being that we are incorporated and belong to. Of course, we always have our own individual I, but I'd also even hazard to say that there's a microcosm of feelings and beingness on our insides that might even further mirror the macrocosm on the outside. But then, of course, we have our family systems, and we have our work systems, and we have our neighborhood that we belong to of loosely attached neighbors. We have our community in the region of the city you may live in, and then the community of the city itself and the community of the state or the municipality or wherever you perhaps may find yourself in. There's always these loose connections of people where decisions are being made by and for us, by ourselves and for them, but also by a whole bunch of other people that are not me or you. So how much impact does this overmind have on what we do? There's been several instances that I could think through my life where the dominant feeling and narrative changed how I would have done things and how I would have been. Now, the world, the Earth, the planet that we find ourselves on, maybe the Earth breathes. And maybe that the Earth is, in one instance, a individual entity. And we exist as the parts and the pieces within it that make it. Life is a thin covering on the physical mass of our planet. Most of our planet isn't for life. We're just mucking around on the surface and skipping out of the pond every once in a while. So there are bigger systems than even our planet, perhaps. And maybe there is a drive towards something. I see time as a construct of existence itself. Yet the system of time in itself and how it's perceived is necessary for existence to happen and for there to be perception. The forward, or so it seems, momentum of things toward, and the succession of events from A to B to C to D to E to F, and this tendency towards what some may see as entropy, or everything just slowly rotting or falling apart, which does happen in the temporariness of what life is, as far as the individual entities go. You know, one day my body will rot and will disappear. And this ego and this personality that exists painted upon this vessel, just like life is painted upon the earth, will be gone and will only exist in memory and the templates that I've engraved upon my world, which is in the form of my writing and my audio. Yet the actual personality will be long gone in 100 years. But as my guest on my last episode very wisely said in that very interesting example I found about how a physicist said if you were to put an apple into a box, eventually it would rot, but with enough time and enough organization, those molecules eventually, even if it's billions of years, could eventually reorganize themselves back into an apple. You know, and egos and personalities are far more complex than the physical object of an apple. But it's fair to say that even this idea of destruction, which is bound for my being, is still a possible illusion just because of my temporariness. Yet in the cosmic scale of things, time is consistently succeeding, and outside of life's judgment upon it, things seem to have been going on for eternity. There's a lot of theories from science and religious backgrounds that try to put a place on the beginning of the universe, but I feel like there's also enough philosophies and other ideologies that could embrace the eternal aspect of our universe. Like a tribes person who's never had any sort of like empirically based studies in existence would perhaps tell their children that the forest had always existed and provided what they needed. So depending on how far back you zoom out or zoom in, temporariness and the illusion of death and destruction will continue to appear. Yet time seems to be eternal. And as a life form bound in this existence among forms, we use time constantly. Time is what our language is made of. Without time, we wouldn't be able to put symbols vocally in the air using audio waves that could be expressed and heard to you. The sound wave itself is based in time. So, it almost seems that the human intellect wouldn't even have to learn it if it's based in it. And as a lot of other important physicists like Einstein would also say, time and space don't seem to be codependent. They seem to be the same thing. And how space is formed is in time. So I hope that's not too confusing. I'm trying to get to this concept here. So how much can we use the fallibility of our perception and the fallibility of our existence if we're using a concept that could pre-exist before any other concept, this concept of time? You know, I'm sure even the child's brain that is underdeveloped still is in a system of time, maybe a stretchy time. Let's talk about that. How about time dilation? Have you ever noticed, maybe on a long car drive, if you're in the flow, you know, in the go, in the mo, and time shrinks and may seem to disappear altogether once we're in that flow state, once we stop categorizing and marking down dash points in our graph on that time linear scale, we can enter a timeless state where we stop marking it and time can just shrink away, you know. And the same goes for if we're in a long expected grand vacation or some sort of wonderful thing that we've been looking forward to for so long, you know, and you get to that and time just moves by incredibly quickly because you're having such a good time. You know, I always notice my weekends just drift by, and it's scary. You know, and the older you get, time seems to drift by quicker in that same way. You know, time goes by faster when you're having fun. And if you're bored just to death at work, or if you're, you know, cleaning your house, or you're doing something, a non-preferred task that you don't particularly want to be doing, you know, time can be very long and stretchy. In the world of psychedelia, time is stretched and can be very interesting. I've seen minutes elapse into very long durations of successive moments of my perception. And I've also watched time just slip out of my fingers faster than I could even imagine in that stretchiness. So our perception of time itself is bound upon the set and setting, not even chemically, you know, but just in where we find ourselves and what happenstances and happenings are coming at us in that particular moment. But I would also hazard to say it'd be hard to graph those unexpected happenstances on that same graph that we're graphing all the moments linearly. So, we live in it, within it, with it. We are time-based beings. Yet, we also stretch it with our judgment. So I heard this story a long time back about this guy who had a brain tumor. And when he got into the car, at least this is what he described before his car crash, he enters his vehicle and he starts to drive. And as he goes forward, the lights on the street end up passing overhead faster and faster and faster. And as he feels the apprehension of speeding up faster and faster, he takes his foot off the gas and slams on the brakes, but he keeps accelerating faster and faster. And what had happened was that the brain tumor in his head had snapped a brain vessel, and he was going into catatonic, you know, organ failure, which induced a car accident that ended him up in the hospital, which miraculously he had survived and was able to transpose the story. But philosophically, what could be assumed about the situation was during the point of brain damage, his sense of time increased more and more and more to the point that life just seemed to be going by faster. So this again looks towards the organic root of our being, which is our brain and our organs, which we are physical beings, you know, living a spiritual life here. You know, we're making our spirit through perception, just like we make our life through perception. But yet again, our way that we hold those successful moments, that's bound by a bunch of factors. And we're just here riding on top of those factors like waves. You know, not to sound too hippy-dippy there, but sometimes we just gotta roll with it. And I try not to live in time, like as much as I can. I try very hard not to be based and held in a graph of time, which I'm still terrible at, and I kind of have to be because I'm a responsible parent and I have to plan ahead and I have to have all these things, and I still drop the ball because I'm not as worldly as I could be, as some other people are. And I forget things all the time, but that's because I try to live outside of time and I try to live outside of the judgment call of where I'm at when and where I need to be, you know? Those points when I'm telling myself a story about who I am, when that story could be completely false because it's based upon this illusory idea of a lack of time, which is complete bullfokey. I don't know if that's a curse word, but it's difficult sometimes to allow ourselves to just be. And what does that mean to just be? I think being has to be inside that awesome moment that I was trying to describe at the beginning of the episode. What is awe? What does it mean to be full of awe in our life and in our creative experience and the artistic expression of living it? It's difficult to break outside of these loops of delirium and, you know, just negative treatment of ourselves because of our necessary link and connection in time. But at the same time, there is a world outside of that. Outside of succession, I believe, and this is where we step outside of empirical knowledge. This is where we step outside of science. And where everything I say from this point on may be unverifiable, but it's something that I also think is human. Even though we are physical beings in a physical body, I do think that there is an essential essence inside all of us that in one word could be described as divine, which I truly think is awesome, which when I was younger, I chose to call the spark, the light bulb of curiosity, of interest, of life itself. But also just the spark of existence that this world is in its magnificence. And I do think that there is a multifaceted and two different, maybe not two different, that's not like a bilayer, but we exist on multiple different levels of being. And within the physical, there is something that is, for me, invulnerable and timeless, and for me is the essence of what God is, which is why whenever I talk to anybody, I'm very, very patient, and I'm trying to focus very intently on even what a stranger will tell me, because every speck of happenstance, even if it's unfortunate, is a message from that, which is also within me and you, I believe. And of course, this is my spiritual hoodoo shit, so that's where we have veered outside of, you know, science. Well, yeah. Hope you could tell I didn't do a lot of planning tonight at all. I know I'm late. I'm dropping this Monday, which I usually, you know, upload my episodes Saturday, Sunday at the latest. So yet again, I'm very sorry for any of my repeat listeners. If you had expectations of me arriving on time, life has just been all over the place and I've been having to make do. But I'm very happy to be here. I'm very grateful that you're here, and thank you for listening to my ramblings. I do believe I had a point, even though if I'm not sure if I had one now. But maybe you can email me if you have any opinions about any of the introspective nonsense that just happened. So you can email me at the gingerbreadmansdialogues@gmail.com, which that long, lengthy email address will be very available in the show notes. So please send me on a message if you want to talk about anything. What is your perceptions of time? How do you experience time? You know, maybe journal about it and think about how you experience time differently in different time periods. What are your triggers for fast time? And what are your triggers for slow time? Do you ever experience a timeless feeling? What is that? What is the mystical experience? There's some questions that you could think about, and you can ask me any questions that you have. If you have any really good questions, I'll put them on the front of the show and we'll start asking, you know, listener questions. Yeah. Thank you. Sorry, this is kind of loose and ragged. I'm going to go find a book. Tonight, I'll be reading from Zen Buddhism by D.T. Suzuki. This is a discussion on the unconscious, which I think is sort of what I'm getting at when I talk about the part of our being that isn't part of the conscious being. I don't know. I get lost with my own shit, too. So here goes. Huan Ning's unconscious is thus fundamentally different from the psychologist's unconscious. It has a metaphysical connotation. When Huan Ning speaks of the unconscious in consciousness, he steps beyond psychology. He is not referring even to the unconscious forming the basis of consciousness, which goes to the remotest part when the mind has not yet evolved, the mind being still in a state of mere sustenance. Nor is Huan Ning's unconscious a kind of world spirit which is found floating on the surface of chaos. It is timeless, and yet contains all time with its minutest periods as well as its aeons. Xinhui's definition of the unconscious, which we have in his sayings, will shed further light on the subject. When preaching to others on the Prajnaparamita, he says, "Be not attached to form. Not to be attached to form means suchness. What is meant by suchness? It means the unconscious. What is the unconscious? It is not to think of being and non-being. It is not to think of good and bad. It is not to think of having limits or not having limits. It is not to think of measurements or of non-measurements. It is not to think of enlightenment, nor is it to think of being enlightened. It is not to think of nirvana, nor is it to think of attaining nirvana. This is the unconscious. The unconscious is no other than the Prajnaparamita itself. Prajnaparamita is no other than the samadhi of oneness." So, the judgment calls and the way that we determine things with our intellect when we hold on to them and we try to judge things. And I like how the measurements were mentioned in this last quote, because that's what we humans do, is we measure things consistently. And that's what science is the utilization of technology and communication to further how accurately we can measure happenstances and predict them. This is the intellect chewing its teeth into the world. Yet, what Zen Buddhism and what a lot of different spiritualisms try to get to the bottom of is what exists outside and beyond the intellect. What it sits outside of our judgment calls, and what being is rather than thinking is. Yes. I'm glad I read that one. And last but not least, from my favorite book of all time, The Tao Te Ching by Lao Tzu. This is chapter 57. Simplicity blossoms when coercion dies. Govern a state with predictable actions. Fight a war with surprise attacks. But the universe becomes ours only by eliminating coercive acts. By not doing, nothing lacks. How do we know these lessons? By tuning into our essence. The more taboos and prohibitions there are, the poorer the people become. The more deadly weapons there are, the more our fears turn us numb. When craftiness spreads far, the more bizarre what is done, the stricter the laws there are, the less the robbers run. Therefore, the wise know to make no one a foe. The less coercing we do, the more tranquilities grow. When harmony reigns and we rule ourselves with felicity, everyone gains and we'll all live in simplicity. So first off, that's one of the most poetic versions of that chapter that I've ever read. This is a translation by Ralph Allen Dale. Great translation. I've been enjoying it thoroughly. But the poetic attributes of it make it very pretty to my ears. But this one speaks to me because this is what I've been working on wholly in my life, is learning how to stop trying to coerce things. And even if I'm trying to force things softly, I have this educative spirit in me. And so I've often been told that I come across as arrogant because I'm always trying to gift knowledge, and a lot of times people don't want it. Or it turns into a bickerment of what that knowledge is, which is never what I wanted to do in the first place. So the way that this chapter speaks to me is that I could take faith that in modeling what I want to see, that's the best thing I can do by working on me for you. And stop expecting others to do what I want them to do, but hope that by seeing a good model, they'll do it the best they can do for themselves. And that's a lot simpler way of being. All right. Thank you so much for coming. I'm going to go see what Odin has to think about his week.
Hello, people. This is us. Can I tell you something? Some math.
Math.
1 times 1 is 1.
That's right.
0 times 1 is 0.
You're right.
1 times 1 is 1. 1,000 times 0 is 0. And that's it.
Dude, can you guys tell that he's really getting really good at math?
Yeah.
I'm very proud of him.
I'm just in first grade.
That's insane. You're like a 14th grader. You want to tell anybody anything else nice about your week?
No.
That's fine.
That's it.
You taught him some good things. All right, say bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you, Boo.